This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the FOD. It is Wednesday, May 29th, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joe O'Brien.
I thought you were just say pal, and that was it.
I'm your old pal.
I'm Troy Tor Hangover LaValle.
Tor Hangover LaValle, which tends to be multiple days for you.
Oh, man, it's multiple not days. An alcohol hangover.
No.
Actually,
you
pretty
don't drink on tour.
No, I'm completely sober now. No, it's not an alcohol hangover. It's just like a 5 flights, 2 shows in 5 days hangover. In 3 time zones. And throw in a dash of Memorial Day, and I feel crazy. So we're recording this on Tuesday. This comes out tomorrow. And yesterday was just kind of a hot dog and beer type of day. And, I did a little bit of work in the morning, but I said, you know what? I hate the day after tour. And I'm always like, dive right back into work. And I'm like, fuck this. I'm going to spend time with my family and I'll worry about everything, tomorrow. And then today hits, Tuesday. I'm like, how can we already come back to all this nonsense?
Yeah. Like, tour is a strange mix of work, hard work, hard fun, and no work getting done at all in like terms of the business. And so like you come back and you just have like a shit ton of emails and a bunch of tasks that you have to get to because you were, you know, busy being out on the road. And it's just like, ah, it's so stressful.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I had a great time in Vancouver and St. Paul. Holy shit. It was awesome.
So
and
wonderful.
I mean, we could not have gotten better weather. The weather was amazing. I got back here and it was just like that. Just balls hot, awful, humid, you know? And I was like, God, it was so nice in Vancouver and St. Paul. At both places, like the day we left, it just like rained. It was crappy and cold. Like, but the days we were there were gorgeous. It was awesome.
We were really blessed with the weather and blessed with 2 great shows full of awesome fans. Like,
this
is our 3rd time coming to Minnesota, first sellout. They're so wonderful there. You know, you joked, I think, on stage, it's like every year we do Boston, Philly, and St. Paul.
It's like,
and
why?
I think we have to keep it going.
There's just such a...
It's a pocket of
fandom.
There's
a concentration of fans in that area that are just very loyal and very fun and know how to have a good time the Naish way. I mean, like, I'm up there on stage looking out, you know, through these lights trying to see people, and you're just constantly seeing people, like, respectfully getting up and sneaking back to the bar for another round. And every one of them is walking back with, like, 8 drinks, like, trying to, like,
fit in. It's only a drinking crowd, yeah.
Yeah, because they're, like, passing it out to their friends, and it's like being at a bar, just doing a show and hanging out. So fun.
Yeah, I love that venue. And speaking of cool venues, the Vancouver venue was way better than I expected. You know, I look at our manager will send us things, and I very meanly will respond with my thoughts, like the certain venues. And he's just like so sick of me. But this one came up, and we didn't have a ton of options, but I had my heart set on Vancouver, and I was like, man, it's so hard to tell from the photos and Google reviews and the website. I'm like, I think it's cool, but like the video screen's a little different and the this and the that. They don't have this thing that we need. All right, let's just fucking do it. And it exceeded all expectations. It was like this old, it was called the Hollywood Theater, but it was like this old Hollywood vibe in there with 2 bars on either side where the VIP was being held, like kind of everything lit in like red and
it had
yellow.
That like plush red sort of old school Hollywood vibe.
It's like the Strip House in New York, that steakhouse, you know, had that like velvety vibe. And then just, I mean, wonderful Canadian crowd once again. It's really making the 2025 tour plan difficult for me. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah,
I mean, go back to Canada.
Yeah, in the weeks leading up to Toronto, I was like, well, it's good to know that like we have checked this off our list and we will never go back to Canada because the amount of stress with like them, with the venues and the promoters collecting like all of our identification information and getting all these letters and shit they have to send to customs and then warning us about being stopped at the border and what we have to say and all this stuff. And trying to get the merch over and across and paying all these exorbitant taxes. It was just like, well, we're never going back to Canada. They just make it too difficult. And like both shows could not have been easier. Now, it did cost us a lot in taxes. They charge a lot, which is understandable. I always get that. I'm like, you can come in our country and get money from our people. Like, get the hell out of here. You don't get to do that for free. I get it. But like the customs, there was nothing. Nothing. Like, it was so easy. Both shows, in and out, back, no problems. And I was just like, maybe we should go back to Canada.
We'll crunch the numbers. But I mean, it just feels like a no-brainer. I think if Vancouver was on a Saturday, we would have sold those last 15 or 20 tickets. But Toronto was
a
super
beast.
Quick sellout, over 300 people.
And another great venue. It was an awesome venue.
And look at how much we've grown just in the past year in terms of like attendance and views. There's a lot more people discovering the Glass Cannon Network. So I think a year from now, we'd sell those out even quicker, or maybe we can move to larger venues. So I don't know, maybe next year, Montreal and Calgary, just to mix it up a little bit. But
Calgary, there's a country or a city that I literally never thought I would visit. Like in my life, I was like, I'll never be in Calgary.
Calgary's pretty cool, man.
I hear good things.
Banff is way better. I just don't think we could do Banff. It's like a 3-hour drive from Calgary, and I'd feel like I'd have to take my whole family because I can't just go to the most beautiful place on earth without them.
God, we're getting caught up in our. We haven't even like had a debrief talk about the tour, so that's why you're hearing all this from us. But yeah, it was a great time. Great shows too. Loved those Eps of Strange Aeons. St. Paul was a banger.
So ridiculous.
So ridiculous. Anyway, you guys will hear it and see it all eventually. But yeah, big FOD today. We have lots to discuss, including an epic one for the books episode of the GCP. We got obviously a couple news items for shows that are coming up, and then we'll talk listener mail. No, we are stupid this week for obvious reasons, which we'll get to later. But let's talk about some upcoming shows that we have going on. This week is a big week as you start to, really dive in to finalize your prep for Kong Skull Island as we play Kong this Friday night. May 31st at Stand Up New York. We're doing a little same thing we did with Rambo back in March, doing a little comedy club hang with Khalees Hawkins and Natalie Cuomo, and going to
me, you, and Skid.
Me, you, and Skid. We're going to play some Kong, which I'm very much looking forward to. Doors at 8, show at 8:30. If you're in the New York area anywhere, like, grab tickets to this thing. I think there's only a few left. It's going to be a small venue, really fun. Comedy club right in the middle of Times Square. It's going to be awesome. And then there's an after party. We're hanging out.
There's an after party that's being advertised. StandupNY.com. You can buy tickets. And I think all of the information on the after party is there. So we're going to hang out.
Party
I told
free.
Francis it's, to come you know, out. It's going to be a good time, man. I really don't know what to expect. But in terms of like the show, because I didn't know what to expect for Rambo, other than knowing it's going to be a great time that you're going to want to see in person. So if you're in this New York area, we're never going to do a Glass Cannon Live in New York again. So you might as well come see Kong Skull Island.
You might as well come see Kong Skull Island. Looking a little bit further out, we've talked about Gen Con a few. I'm sorry, let me go chronologically. A little bit further out, before Gen Con, we're going to do another show. A show that we did last year. Little event, small one. Tiny event, out on the West Coast. It's called San Diego Comic-Con. Not sure if people have heard of it. It's very indie, sort of under the radar kind of thing. But holy shit.
An up and comer.
We're going back, baby. Marvel is uniting forces once again with the Glass Cannon Network to put on a banger of a show out in San Diego.
Yeah, last year we had been talking about it with them for a long time and nothing really got locked in until the last minute. So I think we probably talked about it on Cannon Fodder for a week, maybe two, before it happened. So now there's still a lot up in the air about who's going to be involved and whatnot, but It's May 29th, so you've got all of June and pretty much all of July to make plans to come to Comic-Con. If you haven't, or if you're already planning on coming to San Diego Comic-Con, we will be doing a show at the con. They're trying to get it on Friday this year. Last year it was on Saturday afternoon at a building outside the con or something. This is going to be hopefully at the con at a prime time on Friday. But stay tuned for more details. The Good Enoughs in some form will be there. And, dude, I can – they made a variant cover of us. I don't want to like say too much, but there's a new adventure that they're going to release that I already have. I've got draft versions and I just got the latest draft, and they made a variant cover for the adventure as well. And it has all of us dressed as Deadpool.
That's amazing.
It's a Deadpool adventure. So that's what I'm going to be running at Comic-Con, which will be nice to like run something pre-written.
That's awesome. Deadpool adventure. I got to brush up on my Deadpool. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So we don't have any more details than that. We don't know a date and time yet. You know, still working that out with the con, but we'll get back to you when we know more. But just wanted to give you the FOD audience, the early heads up that we are planning.
I call it the FODience.
The FODience.
Yeah.
That we're heading back. The Juicians. That we're headed back nice. To San Diego Comic-Con. Also, just after that... Literally, like the next week.
Oh, yeah. Less than a week later.
We go to Gen Con, and you have been talking about gauntlets and shows. Let's get a quick update on that before we get into the Glass Cannon podcast.
All right. So looking now at the Gen Con events, it looks like 14 out of the 22 gauntlets sold out. Get in the Trunk Live is sold out. The Call of Cthulhu live show, it's a 700-seater. So that one's going to be tricky to sell out. But once I announce that cast... I don't think it will be a problem.
When are you announcing the cast and why isn't it right
I'm
now?
Waiting on one email. I can't actually announce that one. I'm waiting on one email from one person. And it's the last little piece of my puzzle and all the cast will be done. Honestly.
Is it Paul Rudd? You're waiting on an email
I'm
from
waiting
Paul
on an
Rudd.
Email from Paul Rudd. No, I'm waiting on a call from Paul Rudd. my friend Paul. But, it's possible during this call I'll get the email and then I can announce all the casts. But I have all the casts for Blades in the Dark Live, Get in the Trunk Live, Call of Cthulhu Live, both the Athenaeum show and the one happening at the con, Blades in the Dark. I said Blades in the Dark. Starfinder 2E Playtest Live. I have all those casts ready pretty soon. But for the gauntlets, the only ones that are left are a couple of Jareds and a couple of Matthews. Me, you, Skid, sold out. And so... some of those have like one seat left. Some of them, maybe there's the whole tables left. I'm thinking about maybe juicing those up. So you might want to grab those before I announce how I'm going to juice those up. I talked about maybe adding Ross to a couple Jared tables, maybe adding Sydney or Kate to a couple Matthew tables just to like throw a little extra value in there. You know, Matthew's just a tough draw. No, I'm kidding. He's great. But you throw in a little Sydney, a little Kate, a little Ross Bryant to a Jared table. Jeepers. I just want to make sure we sell out the rest of those.
Can
so
you please
tuned.
Just add a Ross Bryant to my table? One of my tables?
No, make it easier on us.
God, that would be fun.
Nothing set in stone, so I don't want to make any promises that I can't keep, but this is just something I've been kicking around because I want to make sure we sell all of these out. And we're so close. We got plenty of time, 2 months, but I'd feel a lot better knowing those are sold out. But we're talking to like terrain partners. This would be fucking terrain at Gen Con and little miniature, all sorts of cool stuff. We really want to make this is an expensive experience. We want to make people feel like they're getting a lot of value. And I've been working on the encounters. It should be a fun time.
I don't know if I would rather. I'd love to GM a gauntlet that has Ross Bryant in it. I don't know that I would love to play next to Ross Bryant. You know, like that's a high bar.
But certain people would, and those.
Yeah,
are
but you know what? It's also a gauntlet, so it's not like it's like extended role playing, right? It's just going to be like little blips of really fun role play. Which,
yeah, people be like, awesome. Quiet down, Bryant. We're trying to fight.
Stop doing another poem, Bryant. We're in the middle of a fight.
You know what? I can announce the cast for the Athenaeum show, Call of Cthulhu Live at the Athenaeum. Friday night. And the reason I'm announcing this is because it's almost fucking sold out. Wow. Last year, we knew we wouldn't sell out. We were just like, let's just sell as many tickets as we can. It's a lower price show. This year, the tickets are $20. $20. We sold out of all the premium seating. There's no VIP. But the cast is going to be me running you, Matthew, Skid. Let me make sure I get this right. And the cast of Time for Chaos. Rob, Ross Bryant, Nora Ibrahim, and Kate Stamos.
Oh, wow.
So it's the founders and the cast of Time for Chaos in a modern Call of Cthulhu romp. So there it is. Grab the rest of those tickets. It is going to be insanity.
Wow. So seven players.
Yeah, seven players.
Wow.
I don't give a shit, man. Once you die, you can leave. You can hit the bar.
That's great.
You die or you go insane.
I'm just going to go and do an early death and just mix the music for the rest of it.
I've got, I think, around six or seven for the one at the con, too, because I'm like, it's a 700-seat theater. I really want to try and sell this out. I've added some really exciting people to that show to help sell out, and they're also just people that I want to play with. But taking it a step further, I reached out to Scott Dorwood, who wrote Bleak Prospect, and he did a lot of work on the new translation.
Your favorite. It's your favorite Call of Cthulhu module you've read.
As I said to him, I said, I've been a big fan. I think Bleak Prospect, which is the thing I ran on the original Call of Cthulhu New Game Who Dis, I said, that was my gateway into Call of Cthulhu. I was like, would you be interested in collaborating? And so he's writing a custom scenario for us for the Call of Cthulhu live at the con. And I was reading, see, you're not in that show. So I was reading to you the sort of pitch, and it's pretty wild. I'm like, how does someone come up with this? It's like off the top of their head.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. So speaking of Time for Chaos, it's finale week.
Finale week.
It's finale week. Big show Friday night. Friday night. While we're live on stage at Stand Up New York, your face is going to be live on a premiere on YouTube for the finale of Time for Chaos.
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about it next week.
I feel like a weight has been lifted.
Yeah. It's in the can. Yeah.
Episode 19 was over 3 hours long, and episode 20 is a long one, but it's wonderful, man. It's crazy, and the cast. I'm still getting texts about it. They can't stop thinking about it. So that's always a good sign. Like, even if I'm in my head and I'm like, I hope that was good. Like, the cast is really fired up about it. So I'm excited.
That's
for people to see it.
All right, let's get into a little GCP, and then
why not?
Then we'll do some listener mail. Big up of the GCP this week that we'll go into in detail. But I have to mention before we do that, you know, this was a kind of a relatively frequent occurrence, especially in Giant Slayer. I recall like being at the studio and you know, going to use the restroom or coming back from lunch or something like that. I remember walking in the room and everybody's sitting around and you and Matthew kind of like talking and laughing to each other in hushed tones. And then I'd come in the room and you'd like quickly like quiet up and both of you would look at me and I'd be like, what? And then you'd look at each other and kind of laugh and look at me and kind of shake your head. I'm like, what? And then it would just be, they're killing you on the boards, dude. They're killing you on the boards. I'd be like, what did I do now? And often, so you know, funny. That was just getting raked over the coals in Giant Slayer for, you know, being who I am as a person. So I take no small amount of pleasure this week in saying, Troy, they're killing you on the boards this week.
Tasting my own juice.
A little taste of your own medicine. I mean, after fodder last week, I suspected, you know, like words came out of your mouth and I was like, that is going to start an enormous firestorm of hatred. And sure enough, it delivered. Now, I haven't read any of this stuff because it makes me sad inside because I don't like seeing my friend get beat on. But I heard about it. I heard it's not great out there. So what do you have to say for yourself?
Hot out there in the nation. God. Let me see how I can make this worse.
I know. That's why
just
I like
by being myself.
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm like, he's just going to make it worse by trying to make it better.
I don't know. It's impossible to be, you know, honest and authentic and not rub some people the wrong way. But like from the early days, you and the others would discourage me from engaging or looking at any of this stuff on the online forums. And I just continued to do it. And I did it not to like pump myself up or certainly not to make myself feel bad, but
you're a masochist.
Like, I want to feel bad today. Let me go read that. It was just, for me, it was just an important way of seeing how our growing audience was engaging with our product, what they thought about it, and also to see like what type of audience we were attracting when we were still small. But things changed. We became bigger and the vibe started to change where it became, it was no longer really healthy for us to look at that for anyone. I would discourage, I'd have people coming into the studio. I'd be like, what's wrong? I'm like, somebody wrote something. I'm like, please stop reading that. It's just, it's going to make you just feel bad. Like, look at the way you feel. Stop engaging with that. So I myself have really tried to stop and move away from all of it. And while I appreciate all of that engagement, whether it's positive or constructive, what I was trying to say last week was, like, I think that's between the fans and the fans. We're too large of a company at this point for it to be a constant two-way street. Anyway, well, I'm sure I could have chosen my words more carefully last week. Anyone who's watched our programming for the past almost 10 years and can then decide to take what I'm saying to mean that I don't mean, like, care for the community, either hasn't been listening to me at all for the past 10 years, or they just hear what they want to hear whenever I talk. And I see that. I'm constantly misinterpreted and misrepresented just because of my personality and how I tend to present my thoughts. So I'll take some of the blame there. But after years of toxic vitriol directed at me and my personality and my friends and how I run my business or how I play my pretend games, I've had to create this sort of Teflon-like exterior for my own mental health, where all of that is just noise. And unfortunately, a lot of the good stuff gets drowned out by the bad. You know, and anybody, I see this sometimes back in my reading days, where people are like, oh, it's a pretty positive place here. I mean, you've got your head so far up your own ass to think that they're not, and you have no real understanding of what it's like to be in our position to consume this, because the negative is louder than the positive. And so I pulled out of it. And I think there are plenty of great people on all of these forums. Plenty of great, mostly great, but there's others that have nothing better to do than just try and.
But wait, you're saying that's not my experience at all. You're talking about a specific platform, not the overall overarching response to the content. There's more negative than positive.
Whether it's a YouTube comment, whether it's a subreddit comment, whether it's a Discord, whether it's a iTunes review, I'd say that there is a solid mix. But the loud negative ones are the ones that tend to drown out the rest. And that could be perception based, right? If you're looking at it.
I certainly disagree with that, particularly on YouTube. As I've strived to include that more in Cannon Fodder as a fun way to engage more directly with the audience, I'm overwhelmed by how wonderful and positive the comments are on YouTube. And when they're negative, they're constructive. I really appreciate those. Now, maybe that's partially because McDermott is just deleting the, like, really mean-spirited ones. I don't know.
They are curated. You know,
yeah, that is very possible, because we don't talk about that. Maybe I'm not seeing those. But anyway, go. YouTube audience, you're crushing it. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and those you're reading a very curated list. Now, we don't just delete negative comments for the sense.
No,
sake.
No, certainly not. I've got one ready for you today.
Yeah, that's we leave that up there. But, like, when people are actively campaigning against us or threatening us, I mean, dude, you know, there have been some things written on YouTube that would make your pubic hair stand on end. Like, direct. I don't want to get into it, but the point is, like, it's another reason why I really encourage everybody not to look at this stuff, which doesn't mean we're not aware of it. It's not healthy to engage in that at the position that we are. But, dude, I have been mocked, ridiculed, laughed at, made fun of my entire life because of the way that I do things. You guys make fun of me all the time. And it's because when you spend your entire existence focused on your ambitions, the work that it takes to maintain that mindset every single day is exhausting, not only for me, but for everyone around me. And it was exhausting when I was poor and homeless and still believing with every fiber of my being that I was going to make it someday. And it's just as exhausting now that I've got this, like, tiny little piece of the pie. You know, I have big aspirations, and that leads to a sort of large ego and a large personality, because I'm not interested in just, like, making a couple $1 million over the next decade. I'm interested in changing the world. I want to create generational wealth for myself so that I can make lasting change in the world. Ever since I knew that it was possible for, like, one person to do something that could, like, jiggle the earth in some way, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to I want to do something like that. And that takes a mental state and an ego that is very off-putting to most people. And it's a very solitary existence because I spend most of my time just plotting when I'm not like with family or friends. So no, I can't run a business by, you know, listening to a bunch of people on the internet complaining about how we do things. That's insanity. And it's also one of the problems with parasocial relationships. They're a one-way street. And a lot of people have a hard time grasping that. Now, another problem is that this armor that I've built up over the years has also grown barbs, right? My defensiveness and my fervor comes from this place. And you've heard me say this before, where like, if anyone tries to stand in the way of our livelihood, I'll fucking destroy you, because I have been to the bottom and I don't ever want to go back there. I've tried so many things and failed. The fact that this thing worked, like if anyone tries, I'm just fiercely protective of what we've built and I'm unapologetic about that. So I get fired up and I speak out of my ass sometimes, not because I'm thin skinned, because I'm just a fucking freight train and I will run anyone over that tries to, you know, get in the way of what we built. I don't give a shit. So what I'm trying to do with this part of Cannon Fodder, where we share our behind the scenes part of the business, I'm trying to demystify the road to success. And I talked about this before because it's something that I wish that I had coming up. I wish that I knew the like ins and outs of how people made it. So now that I've achieved this small level of success, I want to share that road with the community. The difficulty is I'm also a personality on the network. I mean, the network is based around my personality in many ways. And I'm also the CEO. And one of my jobs as the CEO is to scale this company to infinity. And there are a lot of people that don't want that. They want us to remain small and they want us to play their game the way that they think it should be played. Well, we don't want that. I certainly fucking don't. And part of this process is being obsessive about numbers and engagement and P&L statements, because those are quantifiable metrics. People who comment online aren't, right? That's a niche. That's a byproduct. And it's great that people want to talk about what we do. It just has nothing to do with what we're doing. Praise, I tell, you know, this happened in Time for Chaos a couple of times where people were like, oh man, I saw somebody online complaining about my role. So I'm going to do this instead. I'm like, please stop reading that. But I also said, like, ignore the praise too. I think you should ignore both praise and negativity, because they just cloud your judgment. And so one of my main focuses this year is, how can I be a better CEO? How can I be a better leader to the team, to the group, to our fan base? Now that's the part, I guess I'm saving that one for the end, because I'm working on the other part and kind of the rest is falling apart. And so I'm just reading obsessively. I think it's arguably the single most important thing I should be doing, is learning from others who have done it and not from, armchair quarterbacks. But the problem is, and I'll shut up soon, I think I'm getting to the end of my thought here, is that trying to share that side of the business and my obsession with it isn't really entertaining to a lot of the audience of this show. I mean, that seems abundantly clear. And my number one goal when I get on camera is to try and be entertaining and inspiring. And unfortunately, the nitty-gritty of what I'm doing and my just overall view of things, it's not fulfilling that goal of entertainment. So I just have to really rethink how I approach this desire to want to help potential entrepreneurs with this overly sensitive cross-section of our audience that doesn't want to feel like they're just a number, which of course they're not. I mean, my God, you come to a VIP meet and greet, you talk with me for 2 seconds, you know that's not the case. Now, not everybody can do that, but you know, it's just a little disheartening that any goodwill that I've built up over the years, it doesn't matter. My words are just taken out of context, twisted over and over again. It's exhausting. I also have 3 children and a wife. I don't have time to fucking read comments and respond and do all that stuff. Like I can't do it. I've spent too much time over the past 10 years making Glass Cannon my life. And I don't want Glass Cannon to be my life anymore. I want my life to be my life and my work to be my work. And that's been really a really hard transition for me. And so, you know, I don't have time to just read mean, insulting comments on the internet. no matter what armor I built up.
Yeah,
that
well,
gets old.
Clearly, you do.
I mean,
you're clearly making time to do it.
I don't. I've stopped, but like I know that I'm inciting.
But you went
a revolt.
In this week because you were like, "Oh, I said some shit."
Well,
and they're gonna come at me
on advice of counsel. Sometimes I was like, "All right, I'll take a peek," and then I was like, "Whoa, where's my fucking parachute? I don't want to get involved with this." And you know, the worst thing is, it like proves my point in a way, which you know, I don't want that to happen because I know that I spoke. In a piss poor way, or I didn't explain what I was trying to say right. But at the same time, it's like, be me and read some of this fucking nonsense. Like, you would drown it out as well, you know? It's like Mental Health Awareness Month. And the irony is, like, all these people would be marching in a fucking parade for mental health awareness, yet don't take a second to look inward and see how their words can affect someone. And I have to do the same too, because I understand that my words carry weight. And I get that.
Yeah, affect a lot more people.
Affect a lot more people. But like, my words are not personal attacks. And so, you know, all I'm saying is that, yeah, I've got an ego. And yeah, I'm a narcissist. And it's because I want to do what 99% of the people in the world don't have the courage or interest or desire to do.
Or ability.
An ego and a belief in yourself is like the price of admission in my sort of dream world that I live in. But I've also spent 10 years just trying to make people laugh. And if you can't see past that to that, I don't think I can really help you. I was very fortunate to speak to a bunch of awesome people in, where do we go this week? Vancouver St. Paul this weekend. It's like, they get it. There's a lot of people that get it. And so, I understand. And for the people that don't, I feel bad. These are people that flocked to us at one point. And at a certain point, we're like, you know what? Fuck Troy. And, you know, I take the blame for a lot of that. But like, I also think you don't have to do anything. It would be nice if you saw beyond that and just saw that, like, this is drive, this is determination, this is grit, and sometimes it's ugly.
Yeah, but people don't appreciate that. And that is within their right. I have never been impressed the way you are by driven, egotistical, narcissistic people becoming massively successful and gaining generational wealth. Like, that is not something I personally have ever held up as an idol or something that I would like to achieve. And a lot of people are like that, but you're not. Like, you like that path. And there are lots of people, lots of listeners, I'm sure, that would greatly appreciate details of your path so that they too can affect change. I agree with you that to affect change, you have to be ambitious and you have to be gritty and you have to have a drive and a focus and a determination, and you can't so easily be, you know, beaten down by it, blah, blah, blah. But you also cannot be surprised at all when there's a lot of people that don't like that and don't appreciate that and by the way, understand what's happening, but don't like it. It's not a misinterpretation to think that somebody that is trying to drive aggressively towards success while leaving, just mowing people down, get out of my way, and see that as a massive negative thing. A lot of people think that.
But I don't think, and I don't think you think either, that I'm trying to mow people down. I'll mow haters down any day of fucking week.
That's literally what you said. I don't think you're trying to mow down innocent people. But like you get in my way, you become a hurdle or a stumbling block to my success, and I will annihilate you. You know what I mean?
I mean,
and
if you stand in the way of what I'm trying to do and your sort of goals aren't pure, I'll fucking run you over. But there are plenty of people who may stand in the way of what you do that have important things to say. You know, you and I butt heads all the time, and sometimes I don't listen to your counsel. Other times I'm very appreciative of what you have to say. And,
I think that's kind of where I land in general on the comments. Now, I don't really read them much because I do think, like, as an overall mental, I think overall it's very safe to say, for your own mental health, anyone that is in any sort of public light, like, stay away from the comments. Like, I think that that is simple and a basic, like, truth to our current internet age. Because anybody that has anonymous ability to post and not be identified has the ability to do extreme damage with their words. And, you know, don't give them that power. I totally agree with that. However, I do also think that it is part of your ego, meaning you, the plural, like our ego, our intellect, part of our ability has to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff, right? Like, you have to be able to look at a comment, whether it's positive or negative, and determine for yourself if it has merit. And based on its merit or lack of merit, have it affect you or take action in one way or another. I don't think complete ignoring of an audience is ever a smart thing to do as an entertainer. However, and also just taking all the praise is not so good either.
Yeah.
I am saying
that wasn't what I was trying to say when I said what I said.
No, I'm
week.
Saying it's what just, I, the way I approach it. I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's entirely different from yours. I'm just saying the way that I think about it is, and you'll see it today when we talk about GCP, like, there is a negative comment that I want to highlight because I appreciate discourse and debate and a critical opinion that is well stated. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciate that. And I think that that's as important as anything else.
Yeah.
You know, listening to it.
There are people on our team who have their finger on the pulse of what people think. And they are smart enough to know what to ignore and what to take to heart. And I hear what's important. And then I make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that.
Well, I mean, I think that this retreat is a really good example. Like, as you're building the first ever retreat, you know, the first thing that you did was, like, talk to the customers.
Yeah.
You know, you just, like, went to them and said, like, I have some ideas. What do you guys think about this? What do you guys think about that? And based directly on that feedback, you are shaping this event, you know, as opposed to being like, I have my idea of the perfect experience for a customer. I'm going to do it without polling or asking anyone what they want. Like, you know, that's not how you're approaching this.
I went directly to that. I mean, I learned this from The Lean Startup, another great book that I read this year. And it's like, you know, a lot of people come with their idea and then they try to get the customer to want
to shove, like, that idea.
Here's the idea. Instead of listening to them and then changing the idea. So from the outset, I was just like, what do you want? What does this retreat want? And I think it's going to be a wonderful time. You know, in terms of, like, you know, I just take a, I know that this wasn't your intention, but, like, there's the word narcissism and ego, it's been bandied about a lot. And it's just that I don't want people to think, well, I mean, people are going to think what they want to think, but, like, it's not a, I only care about myself and I only want what's best for me. So get out of my way type of thing. I think that's not, when I say narcissism, it's not like I love myself and I'm never wrong. Watch me take over the world. And if I have to stomp on Joe and his family, so be it. It's just, I think there's this epidemic, might be too strong of a word, but I do think there is this sort of undercurrent, in America and the world where ambition and ego have become vilified or at least misunderstood, where, like, people don't understand, like, it takes a lot to try and make earth-shattering change. And you have to have a belief in yourself that is not rational. And, you know, so people will try to vilify that because then it makes them feel better about themselves for either not having that or not wanting to do that. And, you know, there's another great book that I read earlier.
Right,
this
but
year.
That's also a valid opinion, is what I'm saying.
I'm not saying it's not a valid opinion. I'm just like, well, no, I don't think it's a valid opinion.
Right. So, but like,
it's not a valid opinion to not to dislike someone because they have drive and ambition. And I think that happens a lot.
And that's where I disagree.
I think, like, hustle culture is, like, people aren't supposed to be, oh, you're not supposed to hustle anymore. You know, just go start a GoFundMe. Now, that's being super pejorative. But, like, I think that someone having drive and ambition, it doesn't need to be lauded, but you shouldn't, like, I think a lot of people that hate on that is because they don't have it in themselves or maybe they don't want it. So, like, it makes them feel better to, like, hate on somebody with drive and ambition. And I'm not saying that's even what's happening here, but I don't think that's a valid opinion in my in my opinion.
Well, yeah, that's I guess where I disagree with you. It's just people are different. People are very different.
No,
and so they're going to have these negative opinions, and you just have to, like you said, you know, you listen to what is going to, in your opinion, make it, you know, going to make you a better person, a better performer, a better entertainer, a better CEO. Like, listen to the ones that are going to do that. Don't listen to the ones that aren't, in your opinion. However, I do certainly see where that comes from. All I'm saying is I don't think it comes from a misunderstanding. I think it comes from a pretty clear understanding and a dislike of somebody that does things the way you do things, which is fine.
I think there is a misunderstanding, though. Maybe not all the time. I see what you're saying. And this is, when you're talking absolutes, you're never going to get to the real answer. But like, I think there is a misunderstanding in the sense that like, that person's trying to do it for themselves. You know what I mean? Like that ego is self.
Yeah. So it's hard. Like for many, many years, we've been friends and we've had this business together. And, you know, and you also have this outsized persona as the GM of these shows that's very adversarial on everything, apparently, but Time for Chaos. And you,
I really like those people.
That has created an easy route to people when you say things like you said last week to drive into an opinion that it's all just kind of for you. Whereas those of us behind the scenes who have talked you through many, many issues over the years, not only personally, but personally within our group, personally within other people in the company, personally with a fan or two or another business partner or something. And, you know, I can say firsthand how incredibly thoughtful you are about other people's feelings and opinions and their, you know, not wanting to hurt people and wanting, you know what I mean? Like, you're very much so like that. It just, it never comes out in shows because that's not funny. You know what I mean? Like but that's definitely like the way that you are in the background. You're extreme, sometimes way more so than me. Like, I'll be like, fuck that guy. Like, we need to blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, come on. You got to think about this. You got to think about this. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll be nice. Like, Don't get this turned around. Like, there are times when Troy's definitely the one that is like making things harder on us so that we are kinder to someone. Like, that definitely happens. It's just a matter of getting that all out there is hard for people to know all of that, you know?
Dude, so being alive,
they get a little surface.
Being alive is hard enough, right? Being alive in this current world is difficult. Having any sort of like notoriety and being in a world where like, people comment on not only your creative endeavors, but you as a person it's a lot. And so it's kind of even at your best to try and like divorce yourself from that. It's hard. It gets through sometimes. Now, what I don't want to do is change, you know, based on others' comments. You know, it's just, you know, I try to take a very Thich Nhat Hanh approach to things. It's like when people are angry, you know, you got to be aware of what you may have done to contribute to that. But at the same time, like, those people are suffering from things that may have nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. And so you've just got to, it's very, very difficult. You know, I mentioned to you, when we started becoming aware of the shitstorm that this other book I read, early in the year called Rework by the founders of Basecamp. They say it's important to draw a line in the sand. They're like, just become clear on like, this is who I am. This is who we are. And they say, if you're not upsetting people, then you're not pushing hard enough. And you may lose some customers along the way, but you never really had them to begin with. Now, I told you this the other day, and I probably didn't articulate it well enough, but you had sort of dismissed it as fortune cookie wisdom. And I get that, but I also think there's some truth in there. I'm not a politician. I think I could, if I wanted to, manipulate people with PR speech, but I want to be ugly and vulnerable and authentic, and I want to make mistakes in public. I like to see how far I can take things, whether it be a joke or a personality trait, and then course correct along the way. And so because of that, I have to suffer the slings and arrows for that, and I get that. But for those of you that are inspired by my insanity and see me for me, I think that a day is going to come when I'm going to strike out on my own with side projects for that audience. To the rest of you, you know, I think I'm just going to kind of reorient myself here on Cannon Fodder because it's no longer entertaining to a subsection of this audience. I'll do something different in the future where people will come and will enjoy that.
What was that? Did you just announce a solo tour? What is that? A solo album?
Stay tuned, man. You'll be one of the first to know. Or the last.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Okay. That's a little hot drop for everybody to comment on as Troy leaves the Glass Cannon Network officially.
Well, dude, it's one of the reasons we haven't done a Bantcast, right? Because you and I have talked about the Bantcast forever. And one of the main reasons I haven't done it is because I don't want to go on the Bantcast under the Glass Cannon Network and have to tiptoe around how, you know, we see life. I would rather to just be how we are off camera on a microphone, even if we say stuff that people aren't going to like, you know, within reason. And so that's why I haven't done a Bantcast, because I don't want to fucking, I don't want to read comments about ourselves. You know what I mean? So we'll do that. We'll do it a different way.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's.
That's all the time we have today.
I know. We used it all up. I do actually have to cut listener mail, unfortunately. I'm sorry, guys, but we'll get to it next week. There's just so many good things I want to talk about in this episode, particularly, you know, an episode that, you know, I thought was very much needed. I think a lot of people felt that way for a lot of different reasons. As at Fingerdrop put it on YouTube, and I just heard it in the perfect voice. A very special episode of the Glass Cannon Podcast. It's like you could just hear it coming, and we've had this happen once before. I mean, it's so funny thinking about episode 30. So that was episode 35, right? Yeah, that was or 36.
35. Christ. 36, I think, maybe.
Was that episode 36?
Yeah. I think it was 36.
36. Oh my God. YouTube has gotten very weird with how they lay it out now, and I can't even see the title. Anyway,
it's probably our fault.
So yeah, coming off of, yeah, it was 36. So coming off of 35, we talked about how episode 35 had, you could draw so many parallels to episode 50. Mm-hmm. And then we come in here with episode 36, and it, to me, it is the parallel of another Giant Slayer episode.
This is another quiz.
Yeah. Come on. What's the parallel? Changed the course of the whole campaign.
Misconnections?
Misconnections. Episode 61. Now, I went and pulled an old comment. Speaking of Reddit, Kaiser Grizzly, I believe, started the Reddit, started the subreddit. I don't think Kaiser Grizzly is even a part of it anymore. I'm not sure. But Kaiser Grizzly was the original starter of the subreddit. And I pulled a comment from 8 years ago. Wow. It was the only comment on that episode. So back then, no one was
coming. The comment.
Yeah, exactly. 8 years ago, this comment from Kaiser Grizzly on Misconnections. This was a fantastic episode. Heavy role play with fantastic character development. It's like, you see any parallels there? Could that be a comment on this episode? I think a lot of people were saying a similar thing. After episode 35, you saw our faces at the end of that episode. It was just, everybody was so defeated and so sad. You must have felt like you wanted to approach this episode in a different way, because this is an entirely different episode, unlike anything we've done so far in Gatewalker. So what happened in your mind as a GM after 35 that you thought about going into 36?
Yeah. So I don't know if we mentioned it on air or off air. I feel like it was off air a few months ago. We were talking about the sort of entryway into this adventure, how you kind of start, I would say in medias res, but it's really beyond in medias res. Like the inciting event happens off screen. It's like months later and you're trying to suss this out. And so I think Matthew made a comment like, oh, it was our idea. I was like, no, I thought to myself later when I was watching the episode, I was like, actually, I'm the one that said that, like, I originally thought that maybe I would start this with all of you guys at, Riddleson's manor. Janet, and I was just like, I don't really want, that's not how I wanted to do it. But you know, maybe we'll do it someday. And so I kind of had that idea in my head, but I was also like, I didn't want to force it. And I also didn't want to really start digging into that work because that's what it is. You know, it was,
it's a lot of work. Yeah.
It was like, if it's going to happen, I'll know the right moment. Well, right when Talitha died and we're going off camera. We're cameras cut. I'm thinking to myself, like, it'd be cool if we could see a Talitha Lucky scene. So in that moment, I was like, Talitha Lucky scene.
So wait, you thought of the Talitha Lucky scene the second we stopped
recording the previous episode. We were doing pickups, and I was like, I just, you know, the beginnings of an idea, Talitha Lucky scene. And then I just kind of filed that away. And then I don't think I mentioned this on the show, but I think at the time we recorded this, I was reading this book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And it's funny because somebody I met in St. Paul was like, have you ever read any Simon Sinek? I was like, yo, I just finished Start With Why. Phenomenal book. One of the top five I've read all year. And in this book, he's talking about like the sort of golden circle of how businesses are built and whatnot. There's the what and the how and the why. And as you grow, a lot of people lose sight of the why. You know what you do, you know how you do it, but you kind of forget the why. And as you get bigger and bigger,
find your why.
If you don't have that why is the backbone, you kind of lose it. He talks about how like when Bill Gates left Microsoft to go focus on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, even though he was only gone for a couple of months, like they shuddered because the company was defined by Bill Gates' presence. Same thing happened when Jobs left Apple. And, you know, you see it time and time again when the founder of Walmart died. Jobs. I've been reading a lot of the Bible.
CEO, the creator.
Well, the same thing happened when like the founder of Walmart died. Anyway, so I've really been thinking about this. I was like, ooh, when a split happens, it's because you lose your why. And we went through that split. We saw a boom when COVID hit, and then we just started producing so much stuff. We definitely lost sight of why we were doing it. And it became a job for us, a job that we just kind of didn't like often because we couldn't control the growth. We couldn't manage the growth. And we lost sight of why we were doing this. So I started this episode very pointedly, like asking everyone why they play role playing games. And because I wanted to get back to the heart of that. I also knew there was, you know, a lot of negativity out there. From, you know, bottle caps, hero points and whatnot. I want to get back to the why we're doing this, to kind of remind everyone at the table and everyone watching why we do this and why we love it so much. And then it was for me like, let's really focus on the why of these characters, because that's something that has not translated through these first 35 episodes. You haven't seen it. And so I called the episode Missing Moments as sort of a pun, because we're like, we get to see everyone's or talk about everyone's missing moment. But I think these were also like missing moments from the show thus far. Like
campaign.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we're always drawing parallels. And I hope to be genuine with how I discuss the difference between playing an actual game versus playing a game for a show. But like, if this game was not recorded for a show, it would also have some of the problems that it had. You know,
absolutely,
We didn't have those, like you said, the whys for the characters, why they're risking their lives for this stuff. That's always been so important to me in these adventures. Even as a GM, I always kind of drove that home with players. I would be like, why would your character go out and get riddled with arrows and get fire spells cast on them, get down to their dead, get raised by a cleric, and go out and do it again the next day? Like, why on earth would they do that? You have to have a damn good reason. And finding that is huge for a character. It drives every decision that you make. And it is really fun when you know that. It makes decisions easier. Even if they're bad, they're good. They're fun because you know what your character would do. It's when you don't know and you're in kind of a limbo that it's not even fun to play.
Yeah. And one thing that I did differently with this episode than I've done in the past is I texted Matthew and Sydney on the drive in. I was like, hey, I think I'm going to open up today's show with Talitha and Lucky back when they like first met. And that's all I said. I didn't tell you anything. I didn't tell Kate or Skid.
Yeah, like we had a whole scene and like I didn't know it was coming at all. It was totally improv.
And that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want you guys to pre-think about it too much. I didn't want you to write anything.
It would be good?
I didn't want you to
You
plan
were worried
anything.
It might be excellent, and so...
Well, you could say...
By the way, I thought Lucky and Talitha were fantastic, and I thought, like, scripted. Scripted. That's incredible because that was so good. I felt like when I was doing Ramius, I was like, where are we getting to here? What am I going for here? I don't really know. I did feel a little lost.
But you know, but when you think that, you end up finding it, right? Because I think you found it. I certainly think you found it.
Yeah, I certainly got out a lot I wanted to get out about him.
Yes.
It was great. It was great.
And that's why, dude, the more I can get away from pre-planning and scripting, the better. Even when I have a script, I try to ignore it because I don't want to be weighed down by that and lose something in the moment. And so that was a big part of this as well. It's like, just throw you out there because if you know you've got this scene, you're going to have to find what is most important in that moment without overthinking it. So everything you've thought about this character so far, it's got to come out. And I think we saw that in a bunch of different ways. And then you got a little bit of lightness with Buggles and Zephyr, but also really interesting from Kate. Wait, did that happen? I guess that happened later, seeing like Zephyr's journey from before to like now thinking she might be cursed and can't shoot arrows anymore. And so then you juxtapose all of those conversations with this conversation by the campfire and a new person joining.
Yeah, it's just, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, Sydney dropping right back into Lucky was awesome. I mean, she just like, boom. It was like a transformation happened. It was great. At I Am Veneer on YouTube said, I freaking love Sydney. She is a treasure. And I think that was partially because of how well she played Lucky, but mostly because how she reacted to the trench coat, which is one of the funniest things.
Oh my God.
We have ever seen naturally come out on the GCP is her mistaking a shady salesman for a pedophile. Mixing up those two concepts.
Oh, like a pedophile?
Oh, God. It was just so good. Yeah. It was just so good. I want you to do me a favor. We were talking about comments. We're talking about how you don't want to engage anymore and you hate everyone in the audience is what I took away from
that. That's what they'll clip, by the way. You know what's so sad is like people are going to walk away from this still like – they'll just fucking find little things, I'm sure, to like hate on it. It's just.
Oh, dude, they don't have to go far to find it. They have their opinions, and their opinions aren't going to change. It's fine.
We really care. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the people
you definitely
who know we care too much. But
if there's one negative we have, it's that we care too much.
We work too hard.
I want you to do me a favor. Now, this will probably be a bad look on you at this current time in this current climate. But I think it's comedy gold. If you could
Who are you voting for?
If you could go to episode 36 on YouTube, there is a comment from at Donovan Linge.
Do you want me to go there?
I want you to go there.
I
want you to sign in as you, not as the Glass Cannon. Though you could, I guess, sign in as the Glass Cannon.
Wait.
It just wouldn't be quite as funny. There's a comment by at Donovan Linge. And the comment is Joe going to get a bottle cap for his heartfelt acting? And I would love it if you just responded, no, like from your account and just said, no. Like when I saw their comment, I just laughed out loud in my head, imagining like one reply. And it's like, open the reply. And it's just Troy LaValle. No, it would just be comedy gold. But anyway, thank you for the comment. And I, Troy, if you do that, everybody on Fodder will know it was an inside joke.
On it.
Awesome. All right. One more comment before we get to the negative one, which I want to discuss.
I was going to say, wasn't there a real mean one?
Yeah. No, it's not a mean one. This is a great one that these last two are ones that I connected with really, really well. At Kazen5907 nailed it for me. Absolutely nailed it. Fucking Hubert has got to be the funniest character that I absolutely cannot wait to see killed off. I was like, you're speaking directly to me. You're in my mind. That was amazing. And then this is the critical one that I really like. So at Mythor 8, I want to bring this up because I also thought this, was concerned about this during the episode. Mythor 8 said, I'm probably in the minority here, whenever that starts. Whenever a comment starts with that, you know it's going to be bad. I'm probably in the minority here, and I'm a huge fan. But this is a little too deep roleplay heavy for me all in one go. I honestly prefer more fun and silly off-the-cuff roleplay moments from GCP, like meeting random shopkeepers with odd backstories, rather than the heavy drama, which is why I stopped listening to Critical Role. Very interesting. Now, I'm not that familiar with the length and breadth of all Critical Role's campaigns in terms of how much drama they do exactly, but I thought... So, did you ever think, like... we should split these up because it was a lot in one go. It's like, all right, so we're going to get more about Lucky. We're going to get more about Talitha. We're going to get more about Brother Ramius, Buggles and Zephyr. Then we're going to add in and this was, by the way, not you. This was Asta sort of brought this out. It was like, we should say something about ourselves. All right, now we're going to do Brother Ramius's whole gate moment reveal for the first time. Then we're going to reveal that Zephyr has all these doubts and doesn't want to be there and blah, 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 all this stuff. And not move anywhere from the initial campsite after the death of the character in that whole episode. Did that concern you at all? I mean, obviously, I think we both look back and love the episode. However, I thought the comment had merit, was kindly stated, and it was something I was thinking at the time. I was like, maybe we should just split these out over two episodes and have a little exploration in between. I don't know. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that there was a world where I would have loved if the entire episode was a flashback. And we don't even get to the campfire until next week. If I had enough sort of meat on the bones there in my head, I would have. But I just wanted to keep it to like three interactions because the pacing felt right. How long those took, I didn't know. Like, we took our first break after Talitha and Lucky. So like, we were already 45 minutes into the episode with only one of those vignettes. But the one between Riddleson and Ramius, and then the one between the Majordomo, Zephyr, and Buggles, those ones moved a lot more quickly. So when we got to the campfire, I was like, all right, great. I'm looking at the time here. I'm like, let's this breathe a little bit. I did give pause when Asta was like, let's go around the table, because I'm like, all right, we don't need all of this.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I dove in because
it's
I was like
a metronome in my head. I can just feel like we don't need this. But that's the beauty of having an NPC in there, because I was like, all right, wait, just waiting for it. And then Hubert comes in with his
joke. With
the
cloaca.
And now we don't need to keep
comedy
going.
Gold. And then we don't need to keep going.
But now we've moved on. We've inserted some humor there, and then we don't need to keep going around the table.
Yeah. I don't know. I think people sensed it. It's so funny because I sensed it. I was like, we don't need this all in one episode. Also, it makes the episode kind of feel to me on the downside a little bit like almost like apologizing for not having all this in there earlier, right? Like, oh, we need to go back and do all this stuff. It was very organic in that. In the moment, I was like, you know, I could push this off further. Or as Brother Ramius, I can kind of be like, you know what? Let me get this weight off my back, right? This elephant off my back. Like, I've been hiding this thing for so long. No one's really pressed me on it. And who cares? Like, let me just get it out for the audience at least, so they kind of know why he's risking his life day in and day out. And by the time I was finished it, I was like, God, that was long. It's because for months and months and months and months and months, I've thought about this story and I've kind of added to it and tweaked it and changed it and adapted it and whatever. I've never written anything down, but it's always just been knocking around in my head. So then when it did come out, it was not extremely efficient. And when I finished it, I thought Sydney did a great job of sensing it too. I mean, Sydney was sensing it when she was like, I thought we would say like what our favorite food was or something. I can't remember what she said, but she was like, that was a lot. And it turned into a good comedy bit. And I'm glad that it wasn't like everybody then go into great detail about your gate moment. I think it ended up panning out well at the end, but I did think that Methor 8, I appreciate that comment. And that's a good example of like, hey, just stating your opinion on this. I do think it was a lot in one moment, but that is also, it was really the exception rather than the rule in this campaign. We kind of needed that. And you'll see as we move on, we're not going into in-depth heavy role play again and again and again in the next episodes, which we've recorded. So, the stories shall continue. And I'm not going to say anything about Matthew's character. We will save that. We'll save that for the FOD next week. You know what else I think we'll save for the FOD next week is listener mail. I'm sorry. I've got some great messages here, but we'll get to them next week. They're not going anywhere. And we just went too long today.
You got a short one? I could chat. I don't want to go do work.
A short one? Yeah, I mean, God, we're running really long here. Let me see if I have a short one.
Well, shorties, talking shorties.
I'll grab one here. This one is kind of, we've sort of loosely answered this before, but coming off of the situation with Talitha, I'd love your thoughts. You've kind of joked or hinted, but I really want you to really, really think about it here in this international edition question. Oh, wait a minute. Let me play Nick. Let's let Nick play us in at least. You got to give Nick a little love.
That's right. He's got one.
It's time for listener mail. Gotta get
on it.
Time and listen to me.
On it. All right, so international edition. We got Joshua from Wollongong, Australia. Never heard of Wollongong, Australia before. What's up, Joshua? Thanks for writing in. I've heard a lot of talk on a certain forum.
Bum, bum, bum.
About the gatewalkers. About the gatewalkers AP just not being that good. Also, I've said it on Cannon Fodder. Given recent encounters, if there was a TPK, would you continue gatewalkers? Or would you change the campaign and start a new one? This is something you kind of have alluded to. I don't know. I think we've asked before, if you have a TPK, what do you do in the show? What do you do in your game? Do the adventurers keep the story going or do you just end the story? We've asked this question a bunch of times, a bunch of different ways. The way that I want to present this one is gatewalkers specific. If there was a TPK in this game right now, if it happened with the snail, would you wash your hands of gatewalkers and start something new?
What's interesting, like I feel I never, and you and I always talked about this, I never liked when someone said like that AP is bad. I'm sure some are objectively bad, but like Jade Regent, banned across the board. We had so much fun with it.
Yeah.
So I feel like a campaign is only as bad as its group. And so if people think this AP is bad, then I blame us for not entertaining them, not the strength of the AP. And so that's where I'm at when I hear that. I'm like, oh, I guess we're not doing a good job for them. Whereas other people love it. And so it's not because the AP is good. It's because they're enjoying our performance of it.
We certainly know it has, you know, proven stellar veteran writers, you know, that are part of this project.
That's what drew me to it initially. Yeah.
So is it us? I guess it's us.
It has to be us. Like, you can only blame the craftsman. You can't blame the AP.
The tool.
Yeah. So, but your actual question, would I, it's the first time I've considered it. Like in the past, I'd be like, no. If you had TPK'd Giant Slayer, no way I wasn't going to finish that story. But there's something bothersome to me about the sort of remaster nonsense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's like, another factor that is not being considered here. It's not purely the story. There's also this other layer that's causing complications.
I don't think it's like that's what's creating a schism between good and bad, but it's enough of like a little niggling thing that makes me like be like, you know what? It'd be a lot easier to just do a remastered AP at this point. Even though, I don't know, maybe that's just an excuse. But had everyone been killed by the snail, I don't know. I also think, like, who the fuck does that? Nobody's really done that. That would be cool to be like, you guys TPK'd. Here's a cutscene to describe the destruction of the world at the hands of the big bads that you don't even know exist. Here's what happened when you walk through the gates, and just narrate it in a final episode. Give everybody epilogues if they want, and then be like, next week, we're starting a new AP.
That'd be amazing.
Pretty fucking cool.
It'd be pretty fucking cool.
Rule it.
For real. Not till at least we get to third level, for Christ's sake. We still feel so vulnerable. But maybe Matthew's new character would help with that. You know, I would love to, Yeah, you know, I'm not going to say anything. I know too much, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut, and we'll talk more about it next week. Let's get on out of here. But before we do, I do want to say a big thank you to Professor Eric, who, you know, listens to our shit week in and week out, always comes back with great notes. And this time, I really should have sent Professor Eric a thing saying he could take the week off. Like, he didn't have to listen to us sitting around doing flashbacks with each other for an hour and a half. But he did, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Eric. You're the best.
We appreciate it. Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Dude, we appreciate every single person who listens to the show, even if you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and want to just come at us. I know that I assume that at a certain point you loved us and then went astray. Maybe I pushed you astray. Maybe something we did push you astray. I appreciate everybody that listens to our content, buys tickets to our shows, subscribes to our Johns. You know, hopefully we can see eye to eye as time goes on.
It would be great. It would be great. You know what I just realized? What I think is so funny about this whole thing, what you're doing, is basically you consider to be not liking you or attacking you personally a character flaw. which I just think is awesome. Because I think a lot of people feel that way. Like, well, if you don't like me, like, what's wrong with me? Like, something must be wrong with you. No, I definitely get it. But no, we appreciate all of you. We love you so much. Keep commenting. I'm going to keep bringing it up. I love it. And we'll talk to you soon. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Later.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of The Naish today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join The Naish today at jointhenaish.com.
Welcome to a journey into the heart of the Texas Renaissance Festival, the nation's largest and rowdiest celebration of medieval fantasy. But what lurks beneath the facade of tights and turkey legs? Well, we dove deep into the empire to uncover a history marred by mystery and misconduct, murders, assaults, and other crimes that tarnish its legacy. This isn't just a fairy tale. It's a cautionary tale of power, fantasy, and the consequences that follow when they all collide. Search for Crime Waves Renaissance Texas on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.